Welcome to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later, where we research the response of our past and review their relevance for today. This is your host, Moshe Kurtz. Welcome to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zuckier, and we're going to discuss a really fun topic. I like to think we only discuss fun topics on the podcast, but a particularly fun topic about claims of forgery and resultant censorship of earlier Torah materials that later ones, particularly Achronim, found theologically challenging. And in particular, we're going to be talking about the parish of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid on the Torah, perhaps some other things as well, and how it was received by Gedolim such as Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Menashe Klein, and others. So the reason that we have Rabbi Zuckier with us is because Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zuckier is a Magid Shir at Stern College and a research associate at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton. Previously, he received a PhD in ancient Judaism at Yale University, was a member of Yeshiva University's Kol Elyon, served as a postdoc at McGill and Notre Dame University, and was director of the Orthodox Union's Jewish Learning Initiative on campus at Yale University. Rosh Tavis JLIC, right? Yep, Rabbi Zuckier is an alumnus of Yeshivat Har Tzion and Reitz, as well as of the Wexner and Tikva Fellowships. He has lectured and taught widely across North American synagogues, as well as our own, and at Yale Divinity School, Yeshiva College, Revel, Turo Graduate School of Jewish Studies, the Tikva Fund, and Benot Sinai. A founder of the Lehrer House, Rabbi Zuckier serves on the editorial committee of Tradition and has edited two books on contemporary Jewish thought. And so as you can see from Rabbi Zuckier's very illustrious bio, he is not only an expert when it comes to traditional Torah material, but has a very robust academic background as well, which makes Rabbi Zuckier the perfect candidate to have with us to discuss a topic which seems to straddle both the halachic and historical slash academic realm. So without any further ado, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zuckier, I would love to hear about this particular theological controversy that came up with Rav Moshe Feinstein regarding texts that were written many years before his time.
Yeah, first I should say I'm really excited to be on this podcast. I'm a big fan of shooting first and asking questions later. And I think it's really a great concept and very excited to be a part of it. So Rav Yehuda HaChassid is most well known for Sefer Hasidim that's attributed to him and his family, and one of Hasidei Ashkenaz, an important, if somewhat unique, medieval figure, one of the Rishonim, meaning the founder of Hasidei Ashkenaz. And in 1975, Rav Shimon Langa, who is a Yekish, a Jew, he published his commentary on the Torah based on a couple of manuscripts, and he also collected other quotes from Rav Yehuda HaChassid. And in 1975, he published Perush Rav Yehuda HaChassid Ala Torah. And actually, his shul rav, Rav Daniel Levy in Zurich, saw this sefer that was about to come out and said, you know, there's some questionable things here. He brought a shaila to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And what he was concerned about was three passages that appear to claim that the Torah, as we have it, is not the one that Moshe wrote in one way or another. So three examples. One, a passage by Yasem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe, that he says that's not referring to Yaakov switching his hands. That's actually, this is Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid apparently says, that refers to Moshe Rabbeinu putting Ephraim before Menashe in their order in the desert. And if it's using in third person, it says by Yasem es Ephraim lifnei Menashe, and that's said about Moshe, that must have been said by someone else. He says, "V'Yoshua k'savo anshei Knesset Agdola." Someone later, Yoshua, the anshei Knesset Agdola, they wrote those words in the Torah. It's not dictated by Hashem to Moshe. Another example, the pasuk says in Sefer Bamidbar, "Az Yashir Yisrael es Hashira Hazos Ali Be'er Enula." Now, the straightforward explanation is it's talking about the Shira that's right there about the Be'er is what was said. But he suggests, "Uvechumish Hayaksiv." That it's Halal HaGadol, right? Zeu Halal HaGadol, and that was there originally. The Torah, as Moshe wrote originally, had Halal HaGadol on those psukim. Elisha David HaMelech Hesir Kol Mizmore Yasmi Shal Moshe Shebechumish V'Chibra M'Sefer Tehillim. David HaMelech came and said, "Ah, this looks like a good a good Sefer Tehillim. Let me extract this from the Torah, put it in Tehillim, and that's what's, you know, what we have in our Torah has something missing. There's a third example.
Just to clarify, so according to this claim, David HaMelech, basically, he sees a really nice mizmor in the Torah, and he's like, you know, it'd be a shame if someone were to, you know, plagiarize that for his own book called Sefer Tehillim. That's the claims being made.
That's what it sounds like from this perush of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid ala Torah, and a third passage that says that Bnei Yisrael passed by Elas and Etzion Gaver, and he says, wasn't that land belonging to Edom? He said the chronology doesn't work, and it must be that this was written down by Anshe Knesset Agdola. So these three passages that Rav Moshe Feinstein points to, where it sounds like the Torah as we have it is not the one that was dictated by Hashem to Moshe and written down. And Rav Moshe Feinstein in a tshuva, this is Igros Moshe, Chelek Gimel, and Simin Kuf Yud Dalid, he says this is deeply problematic. This goes against the Rambam's eighth ikker. The Rambam's eighth ikker says the Torah that we have is the one that Hashem dictated to Moshe without changes. And he goes through a bunch of places where this comes up. He says maybe Chaseros and Yiseros, you know, extra vavs and yuds. Maybe we don't have that perfectly, but everything else we should assume we have it perfectly. And not only, you know, that's the eighth ikker of the Rambam. And what appears in this perush of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid goes against that ikker, and therefore it's problematic. This is essentially kfira. You lose your chelik in Olam Haba for saying this. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's claim. And so, of course, how could that possibly be? How could it be that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, the very important Rishon, a lot of his teachings are brought down in Shulchan Aruch? How could he have said it? And this is what leads Rav Moshe Feinstein to say that actually these teachings are not from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid.
Wow. So I understand that Rav Moshe identified at least three potential theological issues with this these writings of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Though he goes on, I believe, to claim that as a result, it was probably a forgery. But I do wonder, many times people characterize Rav Moshe saying, because of all these theological issues, therefore must be a forgery. I wonder from a, you know, this is where your academic discipline comes in. It seems almost curious that one of the early Hasidei Ashkenaz, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, wrote something, or maybe someone wrote down his ideas, and all of a sudden it only surfaces within, what was it, the past 200 years or so? All of a sudden his manuscripts seem to surface. It's a little bit curious. Can you explain, you know, forget about the theological issues, just from an identification standpoint, how can we ascertain that this actually is being accurately attributed to him?
Yeah, it's a great question. And a lot of this has to do with the history of printing in terms of, you know, in general. Like if you sometimes you'll read Svarim by Achronim in the early 20th century, and you'll see they're not quoting that many Rishonim. And you wonder, like, they'll quote things that are in the book of the Gemara that are in the Vilna Shas and not much else. You know, in fact, the Rav Shir apparently would mostly stick to things in the Gemara and the Rambam. And you wonder, why is that? Why aren't they quoting the Ritva? Why aren't they quoting the Rashba? And the answer is they weren't published yet. If you wanted to get a Ritva or Rashba, you'd have to either go to some library or find someone who has a manuscript. These weren't published as books. So a lot of things, a lot of Perushim on Shas, on the Torah, Svarim of all sorts, existed only in manuscript and people didn't have access. Now, so that's why this fellow, Rav Shimon Langa, found two manuscripts and published them in 1975. You know, many, many, many books were published in especially the latter half of the 20th century, bringing to light Svarim that we don't have. Still, of course, you can wonder, you know, are these manuscripts authentic? How do we know? Where are they coming from? So from a historical point of view, the best way to ascertain that something exists prior to the date of its manuscripts is if you see that it's quoted by other people. And we find, both in general, but especially including some of these teachings, are quoted by other Rishonim, especially those among Hasidei Ashkenaz, the German Pietist Rishonim, who quote some of these teachings from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. Sometimes they're quoted in full, including some of the more hashkafically problematic ways. Sometimes they're quoted while sort of cutting off, leaving out the line about Yoshua writing something in the Torah. But that seems, from a historical perspective, you know, leaving aside the hashkafic piece that we're about to talk about, from a pure historical perspective, there's very, very good evidence that these teachings were offered by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. They were passed around in his circle. Other people quoted them, And, you know, for the reason that most things didn't get published until much later, this didn't get published until later.
Right. So that's a really good baseline. I'm glad that you set, which is from an academic, I mean, academic doesn't always mean objective, but I think this is as close to objective as we can get. From an academic standpoint, a historical standpoint, these seem to be the actual documents. These are accurately attributed to Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, which then puts the onus on Rav Moshe, who's going to argue that they are forged on theological grounds. Now, I'm curious, you mentioned that Rav Moshe's main opposition was that there are a few places in the Sefer in which he says that the authorship of different sections of the Torah are not actually written by Moshe Rabbeinu, though I'm sure you're aware, and perhaps some of our listeners are aware, there's the classic Ibn Ezra at the end, which talks about the secret of the 12, which always sounds like one of these like martial arts movies or something like that, like Avatar or whatnot. But it basically, he expands the possibility that Yeshua wrote the last, what was it, the last 8 psukim, and then he expands it to the last 12 psukim of the Torah. Now, I imagine Ramosha doesn't consider
it. And then in a few places in the Torah, he'll mention
Baknani Azba Aretz, right, different areas he refers to that as well. So what I'm curious is, Ramosha presumably, as far as I know, does not consider Ibn Ezra to be beyond the pale, to be a heretic. So what was unique about these assertions of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid that seemed to go over the line for Ramosha?
So what's interesting, Rav Moshe actually talks about that Gemara you mentioned, about Shmona Psukim Shavat Torah, the last 8 Psukim in the Torah, that seemed to talk about Moshe's death in third person, and the Gemara has two views. Did Moshe write it Bidema while crying or something like that, or was it written by Yehoshua? Rav Moshe Feinstein mentions that, and he says, even according to the view that was written by Yehoshua, it was written by Yehoshua fully dictated from Hashem, meaning he seems absolutely committed to the idea that even on that view, everything was written by Moshe or, you know, in the minutes after his death and dictated directly by Hashem. And I don't think Rav Moshe Feinstein would accept the view of Ibn Ezra in its expanded form. I think Ibn Ezra is not direct about it. That's why it's the Sod. He doesn't say explicitly, Vaknani Azba Aretz, this is not part of the original Torah, this is added later. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein would say that's equally problematic, but he didn't say it as clearly. So, you know, not to mention it was already published, right? So it wasn't the matter, you couldn't really stop it from being published, but maybe if someone had argued that this is clearly what the Ibn Ezra means, Rav Moshe would have said to get rid of those Ibn Ezras. It's a good question. Rav Moshe does quote the Ibn Ezra in his tshuva. This is the Ibn Ezra talking about a certain Karaite's view that parts of the Torah were written in Yoshiyahu's time, if I'm remembering correctly. And Rav Moshe said, and the Ibn Ezra says, we should therefore, destroy this Sefer. The Sefer is not acceptable because it claims that parts of the Torah were written later. Rav Moshe adopts that and doesn't engage with the view that the Ibn Ezra may hold, that there's a line here and there in the Torah that are later.
Right. And what I want to point out, actually, because I was looking back, I read this tshuva of Rav Moshe some time ago, and I was looking back at my own Tzur Sadaf over here, Vigorous Moshe. I seem to have double underlined this at the time, knowing I would need to later refer to it. So he says, especially that claim in the Peirush of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, in which he says that David HaMelech plagiarized and excised Halal HaGadol from the Torah and stole it from Moshe Rabbeinu and put it in Sefer Tehillim. I think what he says, what makes it worse than something like, let's say, Ibn Ezra suggesting certain psukim were inserted later, is that v'hu garua mishum shehu below tam klal. Rakamolahachis. You're like, why? Like, why do you have to make that claim that Halal HaGadol, that a psalm in Tehillim, was stolen from the original text that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Torah? Like, what is your impetus? What even makes you want to say that? It almost sounds like he's just deliberately trying to compromise the integrity of our scriptures. That seems to what really eats at Rav Moshe. That seems to what nags at him.
I saw that line of the Kimola Hachis as almost like a rhetorical point. Like, there's no good reason for this. Why are you going in this direction? I don't know if it's worse per se, meaning if you're, I think for Rav Moshe, there's this absolute Ikar Emuna that the Torah as we have it is as it was dictated to Moshe by Hashem. And to disagree with that is equally problematic. Now, I guess maybe it's more understandable if you have a pshat impetus for it or not. But I don't know if Rav Moshe's view would change on one perspective versus the other if there's more or less of a pshat reason to make this sort of interpretation, if you hear what I'm saying.
Yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying on that. And I also want to just return to a point that you mentioned before, which is part of the way we ascertain the authenticity, is that the right? The veracity?
Authenticity.
Thank you, authenticity. Wow, I'm losing my English here. Look how firm I am. That's my excuse. So when we want to verify the authenticity of something, you said we look at other svarim that are earlier that made reference to this book. You can't make reference to it if it didn't exist. So Rav Moshe does seem to mention actually something from a Sefer HaTzioni, which I assume has nothing to do with Zionism, considering it preceded it.
It's surprising that it's controversial, not for being Zionist, but that's where we are. Yeah.
So can you tell us about that?
Yeah, and it's almost tacked on at the end of the tshuva, almost like Rav Moshe wrote his tshuva. Someone brought this to his attention at the end. That Sefer HaTzioni was a 14th century German posek and not posek, German author and Kabbalist quotes one of these passages, which again is not surprising. He's not the only one. Other scholarship has turned up a bunch of different places where it's been quoted, including more famous people like the Rokeach and others. But the Sefer HaTzioni quotes one of these teachings. So what do you say? And Rav Moshe Feinstein's response is, okay, so he quotes it. That's also problematic. We shouldn't publish Sefer HaTzioni either. And he even says, I don't even know who this Sefer HaTzioni is, but whoever it is, I never really learned it. Whatever it is, it shouldn't be published if it includes these teachings that go against the Rambam's eighth Iker.
Right.
So that's Kuf Yudalit. That's the first tshuva. And the next tshuva is on the same topic. We get a little bit of an update, right? It's always fascinating to see tshuvos and the history that they tell, the story behind the halachic details. And what seems to have happened between the two tshuvos is this actually was published, not in full, but the Sefer was published while censoring these three passages, or cutting out the line that says that it was written by Yehoshua or Anshei Knesset HaGdola or whatnot. That line was cut out, but the rest was published. And this was done apparently in consultation with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Eliashiv by the author. So Rav Moshe responds in this next tshuva, Kuf Tes Vav, he responds to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and he says, I see what you did. I understand what your approach was in saying to publish it while only cutting out these passages, but he says it's not good enough. This is not a valid approach. The Torah approach, when you have a sefer that has problematic material, is not to just cut out this piece and publish the rest, but rather to not publish it at all. As we mentioned before, the claim of Moshe's claim was that these passages, at the very least, were written by a student or someone else who presented it as Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid's material, even though it wasn't actually his material. And that means, Rav Moshe says, the whole Sefer is suspect. We don't know what's actually his and what isn't. He even points to, he says, there's a fourth passage that wasn't mentioned earlier that appears to say that the Isser Mishkav Zachor is really about encouraging marriage between men and women. It's not really an Isser per se, which is...
Men, you mean?
No, it's about encouraging.
Oh, men, to encourage.
Women, as opposed to do Mishkav Zachor. And he says, that's not what the Torah is saying here. That's not appropriate. That's not a good interpretation. So he's saying, we shouldn't publish this at all. You're going to keep finding passages that are problematic. And we have no reason to believe this was, that this was from Rav Yehuda HaChassid, since we found more and more of these problematic passages. So don't publish it. And he says, even you should even burn it. He even says, he goes to a step further and says that we should get rid of the whole Sefer because it's just causing problems and it should not have been published even in modified form.
So this is interesting. So in the first tshuva, his issue that he identifies is about authorship of the Torah and stealing psukim from the Torah potentially. And then in this other tshuva, he says now he doesn't like it that this perish that's attributed to Yehuda HaChassid is starting to try to give Tamei HaMitzvos that he seems to think compromise the integrity of the Torah. He sees Mishkav Zachar as something which is fundamentally problematic. And he says, by you trying to give a rationale that's just about encouraging reproduction, and this just happens to get in the way of that, you're lessening the severity of this Isser. So that seems to be interesting that it's not just now about authorship per se, but he doesn't even like the Tamei HaMitzvos, which is... which I think is a step perhaps even more radical because, I mean, this was a debate, of course, during the medieval era of Rishon, debating whether Tamei HaMitzvos, I guess going back to Gemara also, debating whether Tamei HaMitzvos were appropriate. It seems to have won out the day. We have the Sefer Mitzvos, we have the Sefer Chinuch. Every rabbi basically gets up for his Shabbos morning sermon and starts making up on the spot his own ideas for the reasons behind Mitzvos. People have a field day with it. So Rav Moshe is going a step further and saying, even the Tamei HaMitzvos, it suggests, seems to cross the line as well.
Right. And I wonder, you know, I think if you would go to Rav Moshe and say, look, here's a sefer, it's perfect in every way, except it gives a weird Tamei HaMitzvos for this particular mitzvah. I don't know if that would have created a problem where Rav Moshe would say, don't publish the sefer or burn it. But I think in light of the fact that there are these three clearly hashkafically problematic views for Rav Moshe, and now there's a fourth one that's also a little iffy, I think that just goes to show for Rav Moshe, you're not going to be able to find everything at first glance. He even says something to that effect. And we don't know that it's from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. There's no reason to. It's not like if we knew it was from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, okay, so maybe I don't understand this one Tama Mitzvos. But if we know there's passages that are inserted by students, where does that end? Where do you draw the line? We just should leave it all aside. And he says the bigger kavod for Rabbi Yehuda Chassid is not to learn it if there's problematic materials. Better for people to not learn. And he says there's no mitzvah to learn every sefer. There's no mitzvah to learn Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, and it's impossible anyway. So better to do without.
Right. So this is almost like, you know, if we were to borrow some, Hilchos Kashrus terms, we would say that it's like muchsuk bitolayim already. You know, there's just like, you know, you can't just like look under a light and rinse it off a little bit. It's just woven in. And who knows what the next problematic thing we'll find if you study it carefully enough. So we're better just putting it on the side altogether. Now, this is something I'm really excited to get to, which is I like discussing the reception history of Tshuvos. And I don't do it on every episode because not everyone has the most robust reception history, or at least is intriguing for our 30 to 35 minute sessions. But I think the reception history of how Rav Moshe's tshuva was received by his contemporaries, I think that's definitely worth discussing. I personally looked at Rav Menashe Klein's tshuva. I'm very excited to hear about that. And what can you tell us about how his contemporaries received this?
Yeah, and Rav Menashe Klein actually is responding a little bit later. What we're going to see, this is from Mishnah Halachos, Chelek Yud Beis, Simin Reish Yud. Chelek Yud Beis, Simin Reish Yud Dalet in Mishnah Halachos. And what's interesting is he's perturbed by Rav Moshe saying that he doesn't know who the Sefer HaTzioni is. Who is the Sefer HaTzioni? How could it be that Rav Moshe doesn't know what that is? As I mentioned, he's a Kabbalist. Some of his shitos are brought down, although I wouldn't be surprised if Rav Moshe never read through it because it's not a standard sefer that one learns. But I think where Rav Menashe Klein is saying, how could the Rav Moshe not know? He gets brought down here and there, so he should definitely have known about it. And how could you say not to publish Sefer HaTzioni? It's a perfectly good and wonderful sefer. And taking a page out of Rav Moshe's own book, I'll read the line because I know you're going to like it. Rabbi Kurtz, he says, Avala Emes, I can't believe Rav Moshe said this tshuva. Must be that tshuva by Rav Moshe was written by an errant student. So after Rav Moshe's death, someone snuck it into the pages of Igros Moshe. And Zarim Shaltubo Vitala Atmo Ilan Gadol. Someone was trying to draw on the authority of the great tree of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and they snuck in this tshuva against Rabbi Yehuda Chassid and the Sefer HaTzioni, despite it never having been written by Rav Moshe. This seems extremely unlikely, and probably I think it should be read as tongue in cheek.
It's definitely rhetorical.
Yes,
he's basically saying the same way you could just invalidate the legitimacy of someone else's sefer, I could do the same thing and say, I can't believe that Hagona Rav Moshe Feinstein Shlita would write such a thing as this. It must be it was a Talmud Toav. Now, he's using this rhetorically. What I am curious, and you could tell me to the extent that you would want to address it, is I'm sure there's got to be a sefer out there. I got to look on Otzer HaChachma. Maybe you could tell me if it exists. There's got to be a sefer out there called, you know, Sefer Talmud Toah, the errant student. Uh-huh. Just cataloging. Maybe Mark Shapiro or someone like that has
it
done that already.
It feels very Mark Shapiro, yeah.
It sounds very Mark Shapiro to do this. We should get him also at some point. Just to, like, catalog every instance in which a posek feels like they're pushed in a corner and they have to say it was a forgery. It was a Talmud Toah. Because what we have really is we have two extremes over here. On the one hand, we have certain theological principles, such as authorship of divine authorship of the Torah through Moshe Rabbeinu, that we hold on one hand. And we also hold certain rabbis, like Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, in high esteem on the other. And we have these two principles that don't seem to be able to be reconciled with each other. And so if you're not willing to give in and either say Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid wasn't such a chassid, and if you're not willing to review some of your theological stances and beliefs, then you're basically left with this one option to say, well, it's a forgery. So that way I can maintain my presupposed theological position, and I could also maintain the saintliness of this particular rabbi. Is this a more common trope than what we're seeing here?
So it's definitely a fairly common trope in Rav Moshe. A few different people have mentioned, and I've seen this in a couple different footnotes, that list a handful of places where Rav Moshe says, okay, this is written by a Talmud Torah. I mean, just in this tshuva itself, Rav Moshe says it about Rav Yehuda HaChassid and the Sefer HaTzioni. He's willing to say these shouldn't be, either these aren't such great people in the Sefer HaTzioni. Maybe he's not such a big fan of him in the first place. It's not clear, but that's a Talmud Torah. And there's a handful of other places that people have noticed. So Rav Moshe seems to have used this relatively frequently. And as you said, it's a way of resolving tension. And it applies here in a hashkafic tension, right? Something, the Rambam Zikarim, a great Rav says something that seems to go against it, but it also comes up, it also can come up in halachic contexts. If you have a stira, or how does this shita fit with the sugya, you say, you change the girsa, you say it's a Talmud Torah, mm-hmm. It's a way of resolving tension. So I think that's Rav Moshe's preferred approach. And it's interesting, you can sort of look at this issue and the different views that we have along this axis. For Rav Moshe, the goal is maximally to resolve, to minimize the tension, and it can't possibly be, right, no true Lamdin could have said something that's kfira. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach and Rav Yashiv said they adopt some version of that, but instead of saying to rule out the whole Sefer, right, which in some way is saying maybe what we thought was Rav Yehuda HaChassid, the whole Sefer, maybe it's not really on the level that we thought it was. Rav Shlomo Zalman would say, no, we still value the Sefer as an important Sefer, but these lines we should take out. Rav Menashe Klein, and I didn't get to this a minute ago, but his view is we should publish both Sefer HaTzioni and Rav Yehuda HaChassid as is, and we should solve the stira. We should figure out how to resolve what they say with our proper hashkafa. In his view, he has this reconstructive view that's very mechudish, let's say. That there actually were two sets of Svarim in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. There was the Sefer Torah, that's Ledoros, and then there was another book that more or less had what was in the Torah, had some other predictions, had Halal HaGadol, had other stuff in it, and that could get played around with, and that's not a problem because that wasn't the real Torah. So a very creative solution, but I think more principally, he would say, if you have a stira between what Rav Yehuda HaChassid says and Hashkafa, so you have to figure out how to resolve it, say a Chiddush, in order to resolve it. There's another approach that doesn't appear here, but I think my Rebbe, Rav Lichtenstein, took on, not necessarily on Rav Yehuda HaChassid per se, but on the Ibn Ezra on some of these issues, because, 20 or so years ago, this was a discussion that came up about which of the Ikarim. There's debates over different Yud Gimel Ikarim, including this eighth one, and how should we relate to it? And Rav Lichtenstein's view was not to say, well, there's no other view. Everyone always agreed with the Rambam. But rather, okay, it may be that here and there are dissenting views, and we paskin like the Rambam. Klal Yisrael throughout history has allied itself with the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikarim, and those are absolutely binding. But that doesn't mean that Rav Yehuda HaChassid didn't mean what he said. Maybe he did mean what he said. Again, he didn't apply it in that specific context. But that's a different approach. That approach says, on the one hand, let's try to be intellectually honest about what Rav Yehuda HaChassid held, and if this seems like a reasonable text, and the Sefer HaTzioni, let's accept it as is. And at the same time, if what the Rambam says really is binding, so then we have to accept that as well. And instead of resolving the tension, live with the tension, accept the tension as is, sounds like a tweet that someone put out not too long ago, but in a slightly more sophisticated way maybe than that reductive tweet had it. But that's a different approach. That Rav Lichtenstein put forward. And of course, some people don't find themselves bound by the Ikarim, right? And they would just say, well, I'm a Talmud of these, you know, this line in Rebbeinu Chassid and that line in the Ibn Ezra that reject the Yud Gimel Ikarim. Obviously, that's, you know, Rav Moshe wasn't going to consider that view, but that's at least theoretically a different way of relating to this issue.
Yeah, so this is great. So just first of all, just the idea of poskening theology, I think, is a very fascinating idea, which I think you just started talking about and alluding to, and worthy of a broader discussion in the last few minutes that we have here. Another ha'ara is that it's very fascinating how you describe Rav Menashe Klein's way to resolve this. I did not expect that coming from Rav Menashe Klein, who's known to be, I think, even more of a firebrand and even, you know, more right wing religiously and principally than Rav Moshe Feinstein on a host of social issues. That's my understanding, at least. Not that Rav Moshe Feinstein was a left wing liberal by any stretch of the imagination, especially if you read what he writes about homosexuality in the Tshuva that you alluded to. It's very clear where he stands on that. But so is there anything else just in that we should know about this tshuva in conclusion and this whole controversy?
Well, yeah, and just on the note you said about being more right wing, this is a funny issue in the sense that it's not clear what the more right wing or left wing position is between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Menashe Klein. Rav Moshe Feinstein is absolutely committed to the Rambam's Ikarim to the point where he's willing to say this text is not from Rav Yehuda HaChassid. But Rav Menashe Klein is fully committed to that Ikar and fully committed to the teachings of Rabbi Yehuda Chassid. How could you say that this, and Rabbi Menachem and the Sefer Tzioni, how could you say that these teachings from our Rishonim are not theirs? How could that be? So he's not as skeptical about publications as Rav Moshe is. So in some ways, it's the firmer view. If Rabbi Yehuda Chassid and the Sefer Tzioni said it, they must have said it. If the Rambam's Ikar is what it is, it is what it is. Then we have to resolve it. But I don't know which one's more, you know, right wing, so to speak.
Right. Your application of the you got to coin this one. If it's not official out, you got to patent this one. The no true Lamdan fallacy.
No true Lamdan.
The Jewish version of the no true Scotsman fallacy. I like that one. I think I might pocket that one. That's you got to put that one out there on Twitter or Facebook or whatever social media platforms you're using these days.
We're trademarking it right here on the podcast.
Okay. And so Isaac here, is there just any final thoughts, and where can people also just like learn more from you? Where can people go to hear more of your Torah and academic ideas?
I guess I have a few different places you can go. I'm fairly active on Facebook and a little bit on Twitter. Twitter is Zuki or Shlomo, at Zuki or Shlomo, just to confuse you.
Oh, Facebook. I should make sure to tag you when I post the episode then.
I have an academia.edu page where a lot of my articles are available. And always feel free to be in touch. My email is my name at Gmail. Always happy to be in touch about Torah issues, Hashgafic issues, academic Jewish studies issues. And there's really a lot of fascinating things. I think one of the reasons why I was drawn to this tshuva, aside from being fascinating for many reasons, is it's at the nexus between classical Talmud Torah and academic Jewish studies, where as I think you mentioned, I find those areas particularly fascinating and productive to think about.
Absolutely. And I thank you for sharing your expertise with myself and with our listeners today. I highly encourage our listeners, for those who want to know more about the nexus between Torah and academic studies, Rabbi Dr. Shlomo Zuckier is definitely someone who you want to be following for that on all the platforms that he listed and beyond, I'm sure was not even listed. Rabbi Zuckier, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing Torah with us, and wishing you continued hatzlacha in all of your pursuits.
Thank you very much, Rick Hertz, and this was a great shooting session.
All right, take care. Thank you for listening to Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Please make sure to subscribe to get the latest updates. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate us and leave a review. Do you have a response to the response that you want to share on the show? Please send your letter to the editor to MitchellMKurtz@gmail.com. And God willing, we would love to consider your perspective to be shared on a future episode. This is Moshe Kurtz, and I look forward to reviewing more responses with you next time on Shoot First, Ask Questions Later.